And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, February 8th. We're coming to you live from the SDPB studios on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. You can also drop us an email. Send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists on board are Mac guru Joel Brovelite, Nine Clouds Bro founder John T. Meyer, SDN sales engineer Amos Asap, and from Peer, Jeff Litterick, a technology integration specialist with BIT. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, we'll post those to the web as it happens or shortly after the show. Hit the Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. If you have not, we would love you to go there, hit the like button, and do what you need to do on that page. This is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604. 368-1677 or 368-1NPR is the number to send us a text. So if you'd like to text the show from a safe location, please do that as well. But most people just prefer the email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Joel Brovelite, I'm going to start with you this morning, or this afternoon, morning out in Rapid City, afternoon over in Sioux Falls where you're at. I got to say, from my trip from last between last show and this show, you were spot on about Wi-Fi in visiting foreign lands. You could find Wi-Fi, but you were going to get out your credit card if you wanted to have Wi-Fi. And I found.
Yeah, well, I wish I could say that from any other authority other than personal experience. So, it's interesting that as you went south, that was also the case, especially in kind of a more resorty type area catering to tourists. I would assume to have been a little better than my experience in Europe, but apparently not. So I guess that goes to show you we're just spoiled. Our internet might be slow in the U.S., but at least it's cheap or free.
Well, yeah, you could just, you take it for, you go down to Taco John's, you go to any fast food restaurant, there's going to be Wi-Fi. And that's just not the case when you're traveling, and you just sort of assume that when you have a, particularly if you're going to take an iPad with you and it's just got Wi-Fi, you're going to have a nice paperweight when you get there. So, but the one thing I used my iPad for, I was pretty diligent about coming back at the end of the day and taking out my SD card from my camera and sticking it in my iPad and sucking all those photos in, and then taking it back out and putting it back in the camera so I'd have two copies of everything I was shooting, so I could make sure that one of those devices got back to South Dakota with me, I guess. So I was pretty diligent about that, and that worked really handy for a couple of reasons. One, I knew everything was backed up, and two, I could immediately take that to breakfast with me or wherever, my friends were with and say, hey, look at these pictures from yesterday, which was kind of fun to do, too.
Awesome.
So anyhow, I wanted to say thank you for tipping me off on that, and I think maybe next time I go down there, I'll spring for the club room, which is a couple stories up. It costs a little bit more money, but it comes with Wi-Fi. So.
And where did you actually go, Ken?
I went to Cancun.
I was going to say, you can tell we're all very sympathetic that you were just in Cancun and had trouble with Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's the way it is. My wife was delighted, however, that I was internet free for as many days as I was. She thought that part of the vacation package meant that total disconnection from work email and personal email and other things. So so to her delight, it was hard to come by. But anyway, the weather was great. Getting strep coming home wasn't the most fabulous thing in the world, but really enjoyed the local hospitality and everything there. I would say that if you haven't been, the all-inclusive part of it was a fantastic thing, and then if you can add the option on with no kids. we visited both versions of Cancun, kid-free and with kids, and I got to say I really much preferred the kid-free version. So if you can leave yours at home and not have to put up with others, that was certainly the way to go. I got to say,
I'll just share. We did a for our client for Marriott. We did an infographic about the cost-benefit analysis with an all-inclusive type of vacation versus you know, just go in and pick in the things you want, more a la carte.
Yeah.
I'll post it on the Tech Radio Facebook page, but it's really interesting. It does end up being a more valuable, more profitable option, profitable cost savings, I guess.
I couldn't believe it. I just, you know, as you sit there and go through your mind the different meals you have during the day and your options as far as drinks go throughout the day and people bringing you a whatever at the pool or whatever, and you start adding up those costs and you kind of try to back off the cost of the air flight and then back off some costs as far as rooms. It really, for us, it worked out to be a really good deal. So anyway, maybe I can get a little travelogue going on the Facebook and talk more about the trip, but that's not the purpose of the show today. But I just wanted to mention to Joel, you were spot on. I appreciate your comments but still found an effective use for taking the iPad along, which is was a thin, easy, lightweight solution to dragging along a laptop or anything else that would have done the same job, but just in more bulkier. So I really enjoyed the experience there. Anyhow,
it's good you didn't use it to read any books or anything. You wouldn't want to have read or anything on the trip.
Yeah, and you know, I'll have to share this photo too. I did share a photo, and I don't know if you saw it yet, Joel, or not. I tagged you in it on the Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio of the iPod hospital that I ran across walking down the street one day. So I took a picture of that for you. That's the one time during the entire week that I thought about the show. I ran across this building. But the other time, I guess there was two times. The other time was the first day we were there. I was down on the beach kind of scanning the little huts and everything, and I saw this couple in chairs next to each other under a hut, and they're both reading Nooks. You know, smack dab, literally, in the middle of paradise, the most beautiful blue waters, fading off into different turquoises and different blues in front of them, and they're both faces buried, ignoring each other into Nooks. But, interesting bit of technology infusion there on the beach the very first day. Thought to share that photo as well. But, yeah, I did not read anything, and probably because I didn't really purchase anything or have anything on there before I went, and once I got there, there wasn't any getting to be done on there. So didn't get any reading done. And anyway, moving on with the show, 1-800-524-3604 is the number to call. midday@sdpb.org is the email address. And, of course, you can text us. 368-1677 is the number to send us a text, if you would, please. Going to move along. We have a couple of going to bring Jeff Litterick in. Jeff, some fairly recent information on some flash updates we want to get to for folks.
Yeah, just yesterday Adobe released off-cycle a flash update that patches two critical vulnerabilities that are being exploited in the wild, mainly targeting Apple Macintoshes and Mac OS X machines, but also affecting Windows machines too. It actually affects Android and everybody, but the actual exploits in the wild are now targeting OS X and Windows machines. So.
And folks just need to make sure that they're auto updates from Adobe are up to date, and that's
right.
How they're going to get that.
That is correct. So
sounds great, Amos. I spotted news from you this week on BlackBerry 10. What's the big news there?
Well, you know that the fact that the BlackBerry 10 has been announced and the pictures are released, and really it's turned into. What I would consider just another same old device, although BlackBerry, which used to be known as RIM, would probably say otherwise. My question there is this really something that's going to be relevant? Is there really still space in this area for BlackBerry? You know, at one point, BlackBerry used to be the default de facto business phone. There was a lot of encryption. There was a lot of security built in. It was had some really amazing technology. 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would never have considered anything but a BlackBerry. But today, you know, now they're banking on this BlackBerry 10 being the saving grace and pulling them out of the kind of the doldrums that they've been in. And I'm interested, does anybody else think that BlackBerry is going to be able to survive? Is it going to be a good enough phone? Is it going to make a big enough splash?
Well, one of the things that BlackBerry 10 does differently than what most BlackBerry users and iPhone and Android users are accustomed to is it's a very gesture-based system. And you can go on and you can read the reviews, but just to pull up the home pages, you know, everything is not through menu buttons or buttons you press. It's through gestures you do in the apps themselves. And from what I'm hearing, it's taken 2 to 3 hours for people to really adjust and even get up to speed on the new system. So that's going to be one of the problems it's kind of going to have to face if they want to broaden their user adoption.
John?
I actually was, last month I was in Las Vegas for a tech conference. We talked about it on the show. And I felt kind of important. I'd never gotten this before, but I actually got a free, like a dev version of the BlackBerry 10. So I got to use it. They just gave it to me to use for the week. Now I think now it's a coaster at my house. But I found, and I know I'm an Apple guy, but like I found it just like you mentioned, Jeff, really difficult to use. And I had used a BlackBerry for years, but just the user interface to me was confusing. And I know they're really putting all their chips on this BlackBerry 10. I mean, that's really like the last move they got. They renamed their company to BlackBerry, and yeah, it's all in on this phone. But I don't know. I've heard mixed opinions.
I think that
does have one nice feature for the business user, but this feature's come into all the other phones, more than likely, even the iPhone, and that is it actually physically in the phone itself separates your personal side from your business side, so that your personal data is protected from your company, and while your company's data is protected from the personal side of the phone too. So, you know, that's a neat feature. It lets you know, dual use a phone real nicely. But that's come into the other phones too.
Yeah, I think, you know, the business application you're talking about, I think, Jeff, is the ability for an IT department at a company to brick that phone if a employee reports that it's stolen or lost or whatever, and now you can do that with Androids and iPhones, correct?
Yes. The problem on current phones where you can't separate is when you brick all the data. I mean, you factory reset the phone, which means any personal data you may have will be wiped out too. The new feature, and that's in BlackBerry coming, is there's two sides of the phone. If the company needs to wipe out their side, it doesn't wipe out your personal data. And you can wipe out your personal data and reset that side of the phone without touching or wiping out your company's data and email too. So it's two virtual phones within a physical phone. And it's a neat feature for security and for other reasons, but it's not the deal killer for BlackBerry because the other phones are coming out with this over time too.
Yeah. Again, we need to take a quick break. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're talking about on today's show, they're posted to the web shortly. Facebook.com/techradio. is the place to go there. And please call for help right now, 1-800-524-3604, 368-1677, the number to text, and our email address is midday@sdpb.org. We're back to Dakota Midday, part of the tech radio version of Dakota Midday. This Friday, we'll be back on the air on the 22nd of February. However, I will not be hosting. I'll be at the state wrestling tournament, one of two going on. I'll be at the Watertown A version versus the Aberdeen B version of the tournament. But anyway, big goings on in a couple of weeks, and that's going to affect the host of the show. And we hope that the guys all have a good time with Joe Telustis, the director of SDPB Radio that day. But anyway, on to today's show. You can give us a call. 800-524-3604 is the number to call. 3681NPR or 3681677 is the number to send texts. And our email address is midday@sdpb.org. Org. A little Xbox news leaking out, and some of it good, I guess, some of it bad, depending on what your perspective is with these things. And so I guess it's being heralded in some camps as a really great device, and in some camps as this is going to all be irrelevant. But we want to talk about it a little bit anyway. Xbox 720. So Amos, two times better than the 360?
Well, you know, that's what you have to guess based on those numbers, right? And it's interesting that that's what they went with. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. One of the big things they're talking about, though, is the update to the Kinect part of that of the Xbox, and giving it actual what they're calling Siri-esque voice control, similar to the Siri that you have on your iPad or your iPhone. You know, you walk into the living room and you say Xbox on or Xbox turn on, I suppose, because they want you to be more natural and fluid with your speech. But it just got me thinking, you know, how many devices are we putting voice control into, and whether or not it's going to be useful. I personally would feel a little bit awkward when I sit down to play a Call of Duty game or something to be talking to an inanimate object. I don't know if that's just, you know, showing my age, and you know, younger folks will get will be more used to that. But I still probably would be partial to the hitting the button on the remote control.
I'm just taking that all in, Amos, what you said, and so basically calling out for help or calling for a HUD or a weapon or a something,
right,
isn't going to be something you're going to be looking for then.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I guess I would have to get used to it. But then, you know, the paranoia in me starts to say, well, if the Xbox turns on when I tell it to, that must mean it's listening to everything. And does it turn on accidentally when someone says something that sounds similar? Or, you know, are there ways for the boxes to be manipulated or hacked so that such that that information can be recorded or can be gotten by other people who are part of that Xbox network? You know, I just wonder where the limitation is. What devices are we not going to have voice recognition on? And what are we putting voice recognition on just because we can and it doesn't really serve a purpose?
Yeah, you got that camera looking at you all the time in your
Absolutely.
Living room. So if that creeps you out,
right.
I guess having a microphone listening to you all the time is going to creep you out. Jeff, you had a comment?
Well, it is kind of showing age because I've seen recently some young folks on the Xbox playing Call of Duty, and they don't talk. They actually scream and yell to the box pretty much the whole match. So, but one other rumor that's coming out for the next Xbox is something that's putting a damper on Game of Spirits is right now there's a humongous market in used games. For not only the Xbox, but for the Nintendo and PlayStation, and even a little bit to the PC, though PC's kind of gone to digital download. And if you go into your local GameStop, you're going to see a lot of used games. Well, Sony and Microsoft have both been patenting ways to prevent the used market from happening anymore. And what the rumor is out of Microsoft is when you buy a game, you'll get a code that you have to enter into your Xbox. And the Xbox must be online at all times to verify that. If you try to sell that disc or sell it as used or give it to a friend, it will no longer work. Once the code is entered on your Xbox, that game disc is locked to your console forever, i.e. no more used market for games. And if this comes out to be true, and the rumors are getting stronger and stronger, this is going to be a bad day for some companies like GameStop and for a lot of gamers that are used to buying, you know, waiting, you know, 6 months and buying the game at half price. So
yeah, that's a big deal, and I've seen it with Steam. You know, you're purchasing those games, but you don't really, I guess, own them. You can't take and loan that to a friend or whatever. And this is actually kind of it's rearing its head in even the used book market. I've heard Amazon getting into the used ebook market with Kindles in a certain way, or they're trying to, so that when you're done with that title, you can resell that to somebody else. And of course, you know, it's probably going to be on the Amazon marketplace when you do it. So there's money to be made for Amazon in that at that point. But when you've got this perfect digital copy, I guess, you know, the argument goes, is it yours really to resell, or is it locked to a certain device, or can you just loan it? Or there's a whole can of worms being opened up here with the new digital content and versus when you used to own a cassette tape or an album or a paperback book or a hardcover book, being able to move that on, give it away, or sell it if you wanted to. It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, well, there have been rumors about Steam and just Steam right now, though there's other PC game download types of clients to allow resale. Steam and many of the PC ones are a little bit less onerous than the Microsoft proposed one because it's tied to their account. If I go and buy a new computer, I just log on to Steam as a new account. I download the games. If I go to my laptop, I can download the games I want on there. And as long as I'm not logged in at the same time, I can have it. My Steam account is on many computers as I want. I just can't all be logged in at the same time. Well, this one will basically tie it to the console. I mean, if you want to play that game over at your friend's house, you're going to have to pick up your console, drag it over, and hook it up to his internet to get it connected to be able to play the game. So we'll see how this all works out in the next couple months because all the announcements are coming out. Sony's going to be or is planning, everyone's expecting the announcement of the PS4 because they've been hinting it this month. So both the official announcements should probably be taking place between now and E3 in June, so and May. So I would expect in the next couple of months, all the new gaming consoles will be announced and we'll know for sure.
Yeah, and I saw that argument about picking up the console and taking it with you and it being a big deal and when you can just take the game and put it in your backpack. I'll tell you what, I've seen an Xbox go in a backpack a lot of times and head out the door. My kids is back. You know, it'll happen. If it needs to happen, it'll happen, but that doesn't make it right. And Joel, you don't think that that not being able to sell your $60 game when you're done with it's a good thing, huh?
Well, that just doesn't seem like a fungible model anymore. I mean, I remember, packing up my computer and or console and taking it over to my friend's house so we could play games. We did that in, like, 94, you know. It's just... That's going to be one more thing that's going to drive people to the booming market for Android and Apple for app-based games that you can download for a buck. Or you know, the big thing now is to download it for free and play it for free and then buy things in-game. And a lot of those games are getting as good or better than a lot of the games that you have to buy and then subscribe to. And that's just we're just at the... Just at the crest of it right now. So 5 years, I just can't see not being able to, own that game, or paying so much for it and having to move your console. That just doesn't seem like a great model.
Is this something that's coming up for the Christmas season this year, Jeff, and it's going to have time to kind of develop out and flesh out? Or are these the new Sony and the Xbox? Is that the timeline on this?
Yeah, especially with the Sony announcement, no one can really afford to be too far behind. And we're waiting to see the specs on both. The Sony is saying theirs is going to be better, but of course we'll have to wait and see. But I would expect the actual launch dates as normal to be in September or early October for both consoles to maximize that Christmas season.
All right. Any other comments on this, Amos, or anybody? Okay, we're going to move on. Amos, wanted to throw it back to you. You had a note about Dell. Is there some Dell news we need to talk about today?
Well, you know, Dell has slowly been losing its reign. At one point, Dell used to be kind of the go-to manufacturer for PCs. You know, back in the day when we had all of the big names, we had the Gateways and the Dells and the HPs, and Dell kind of came out on top of that heap when we were looking at buying a new computer and getting good customer service and getting new components and just having a good quality machine. But they've really kind of lost a lot of their traction, and Michael Dell, the namesake, has seen that, and he recently in cooperation with some other investors, have decided to take Dell back private. And so they offered a good chunk of change up to do that and to try to steer Dell in the right direction. And, you know, my question really there is, are people starting to see the value in maybe some of the lower-end PCs when you can go in and you can buy stuff at Best Buy at $300-$400 for a machine? Can big companies like Dell continue to do that? Are they innovative enough, or is there just too much competition that's taking all the wind out of their sails as far as where they're able to make their money and provide a good quality product?
Things to think about. If you've got a comment about that or any other question that you'd like to pose to the panelists today, we've got guys on board. That was Amos Asup with SDN Communications. We've got Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite, NineClouds Bro founder John T. Meyer is here with a host of, a plethora of ideas of social marketing and media. We also got Jeff Litterick on board. The number to call to get engaged with the show is 1-800-524-3604. Our email address is midday@sdpb.org. And you can text the show if you like at 368-1677. Of course, 605-368-1677. Joel, you think that the whole deal with Dell is kind of ironic?
Well, it's certainly ironic given, probably the most famous quote by Michael Dell, probably the thing that will follow him to the grave, is in 1997 he was asked what he would do if he were in Steve Jobs' shoes, and he said, "What would I do? I'd shut it down and give the money back to the shareholders." So very ironic that he's basically giving money back to his shareholders and not shutting Dell down, but taking it private. So he sounds like he's at least partially taking his own advice. I think it's a good move by Dell. As long as they can not be pinned down by their debt for doing this deal, they'll have a lot more flexibility in the market. They won't have to show numbers quarter after quarter, I think.
John T. Meyer, do you have an infographic on the use of desktop computers over the years?
Let me think. I don't know if we do. I know that mobile phones, that 2013 is finally the year that mobile phones are going to, well, they already outnumber the amount of toothbrushes in the world, and now they're going to outnumber the amount of people in 2013. So not a lot of desktop computer content being created, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Where that all's going, and is that going to drive the price of desktops up then? Because they're not as popular.
I agree with Joel. At least when Michael Dell brings it back brings the company back and makes it private, at least they have a much more, options, and they have more flexibility to do what they want, and probably get a little bit more creative and innovative. Where they don't have to listen to all the shareholders. So it's certainly a big move for them. We'll see. It's putting a lot of confidence in Michael Dell and his team that they're going to be able to, improve it.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of conferences coming up we want to talk about. One of them involves Augustana College and the OTA sessions that we sort of talk about that perennially on the show here. I posted, a more complete schedule on the Facebook page, but do you want to sort of kick this off, John T. Meyer, and tell us what OTA stands for and why we should take March 15th and mark that off on our calendar?
Sure. So OTA is representative of the OTA, what they call the OTA region, being South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota, those states. And it's kind of this is the fourth year that they put the event on. And it's about creativity and kind of art and entrepreneurship, community and technology. So it's a lot of little different industries and kind of overlaps there. But it's a one-day event at Augustana, and I've been to all three of them so far, and they've all been good, all a little different in content, a little different in speakers and nature. And so some interesting speakers in the 2013 lineup coming up here in March. They have a designer from Pinterest, Pencils of Promise, which is a really great nonprofit, somebody who used to, or I think still does work at National Geographic Films, A little bit of everything, some musicians, a guy from 20th Century Fox. So you can check that out at otasessions.com, O-T-A-sessions.com. And I'm thinking here, if I'm on the website, there's only about 50 tickets left to shows. So, yeah, it's definitely getting closer to the time to sign up. And I think it should be a good event.
Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, there's some big names there. And, yeah, and probably limited seating. So the best thing to do is head over to, you said, otasessions.com? otasessions.org. And I know I put the link on our Facebook page, but...
.com, and I will be there, so if you attend, come up and say hi to me. I'd love to meet and connect.
Presenting or covering?
Just attending. Just showing up, I guess.
Being Joe on the street, that's great. Hey, also... Amos, you wanted to mention a gig you're putting together over at Sanford?
Right, yeah. Sanford, on the second Thursday of each month, has it's called the Promise Community Lecture Series, and it's a free monthly seminar that they put on with different speakers depending on their fields of research. And a lot of it has a lot to do with health-related items, but... I actually will be there presenting on February 14th on how the internet works. And one of the things I noticed, I went out there to take a look at what some of the previous lectures have been about, and they're pretty complicated. Some of them are like using mouse models to identify genetic causes and diseases, and then there's other ones, advances in controversies in diagnosing fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, and lots of stuff that's very heavy. And then there's me and my how the internet works. But it is free. It's open to the public. It's at Sanford on the second Thursday of each month. I'm one of the few who doesn't have the PhD behind their name, but come on out if you want a lighthearted look on how the internet works. We're going to be doing some demonstrations and taking some questions, and that's going on Thursday, Valentine's Day.
I was going to mention that. Is that are you going to have that twist in your presentation? How the internet works for dating, or?
Yeah, we should, because it's from 5:30 to 6:30, so it's a definite precursor to your Valentine's Day date, a way to get it kicked off and started right.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole, but what we do need to touch is a break here, and we need to thank our sponsors and take a deep breath. We'll be back with panelists Joel Brovelite, John T. Meyer, Amos Aesop, and Jeff Litterick from Peer. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show or that we already have, we post those to Facebook at facebook.com/techradio. We'll be right back with Dakota Midday Tech Radio. And welcome back to the third half of our show on Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, February 8th. Again, coming to you live from the SDPB studios in the campus of the University of South Dakota. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. And, of course, those emails can be sent to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. John T. Meyer, you want to talk about a little, is that a little middleware you've got going on there? With is that the one that's with Gmail? Mailboxapp.com?
Yeah. So the app, there's a new app that came out yesterday. It's called Mailbox. The URL is mailboxapp.com. And I've been lucky enough. I met the guy. The company is founded by one guy formerly at Apple, an Apple designer. One guy was from IDEO, the pretty popular kind of design creator firm. And the guys came together and said, you know, there needs to be an easier way to do email. We're all so buried in our email from day-to-day life. And it just consumes us. You know, our email inbox becomes the to-do list for everyone else who can just send you to-dos. And so they said there needs to be a cleaner, fresher way to do email. And so they've created Mailbox. And I met them at a conference in October. So for the last 2 months, I've been able to actually kind of beta test it, which is really nice of them. And it just came out on Thursday, and I would highly, highly recommend it. It is only for iOS right now, so you have to have an iPhone, and it also only uses Gmail, so you have to have a Gmail address. But if you fit that description, I highly recommend go to Mailbox app and download the app. It's free. And the idea is to really turn to be more action-oriented with your email. So either respond in the moment, delete it, archive it, or you can actually kind of snooze it to a later date. So I don't want to see it till tomorrow, next week, in a month, this weekend, whatever you want to do. And so the goal is to get to what everyone always is desiring, inbox zero. And I probably got that to inbox zero a couple times in my life, literally. And since I've used this app, I try to do it almost every day to get through my email. You may not answer every email at the time, but you'll take an action on it.
John, is that kind of an oxymoron? Something kind of strikes me about developing an app or a middleware for a Gmail account that's only available on an iPhone right now. Is that? Because, I mean, you know, you think of the Android people having to log into their phones with a Gmail account, but that's not tied to the iOS. That's more of an iTunes thing. So does it go against my grain that a lot of people that have iOS devices have Gmail accounts? It would seem to be the opposite.
I think a lot of people have Gmail accounts, and a lot of those people, I think, have iPhones.
Oh, okay.
So I think there's a definite market. I don't know. What do you think, Joel?
He's busy typing right now.
He's speechless. I understand your point about Android and Gmail obviously being together. But I think, I mean, even when I used, before I used this, I used Apple Mail, the client, like the Apple Mail client, but I was still, it was using IMAP with my Gmail account. So I was still using Gmail even though I was on the Apple Mail client, and I'm now the Mailbox app. It just makes me get through email so much faster.
Joel's comment is he thinks everybody has Gmail, and it seems like I just saw an article that the people have called it a smear campaign, but there's a campaign going on by Microsoft and Hotmail telling people not to use Gmail because they read all your emails, all your private emails, and. Is that something we really need to worry about? They're not, and of course Gmail is saying, well, we're electronically going through them looking for spam, and we're also improving, you know, the space next to it with the ads to make the ads more relevant to what your, you know, what your interests are, but it's not like they're combing through. All the particulars of everything in every one of your emails, although Microsoft says it is. Anybody have any comments on that?
Well, I'll just put out that this is not the first time Microsoft has actually ran a smear PR campaign. They did it a few years ago with the exact same stuff. And yes, it's true that they scan for certain keywords so they better serve up ads, index, and so they can index it because I know the Gmail search it's almost instantaneous when I need to search for anything in an email. But I don't think that actually going through your emails and actually pulling out it and reading the solicit's data and sharing it with anybody, it's just a scan, same as spam. It's all automated. There's no humans seeing any of this stuff behind the scenes. And actually, yeah. Microsoft does many of the same things for their antivirus scanning and stuff, too, with their platforms. So.
Yeah,
I don't even care. I mean, until they can make a better mail client, like, I'm just going to use Gmail. So I can read my emails all day.
Yeah, let me get back, John, to this mailbox app you're talking about. Is this in any way, is this more targeted to a business user, or is this a home user, or is this both?
You can put multiple accounts. So if you do have, I have two accounts. I have my personal Gmail and then my work email, which is powered through Gmail as well. So I don't know. I would say either, I guess. I think that either one can really work as far as who would use it. The only thing I should note, it has so much popularity. I think it jumped up to yesterday. I think it topped out about the second highest download in the App Store. They are kind of doing a slow rollout, so you actually have to kind of get in line. And so you have to go to Mailbox app. And yeah, like I said, it's free, but you have to kind of make a reservation, and they're not giving it to everyone immediately. So it's been long awaited. They've been talking about it, just kind of had a landing page for a few months.
Okay, so are they going to officially roll out anytime soon then, or?
Yeah, I mean, people have it now. Like, it started yesterday.
Oh, okay, all right, so it has.
Certainly thousands of people, maybe 100,000, I don't know, but they just couldn't open it up to everyone right away.
Okay, well, something we'll have to keep tabs on. It, mine certainly is out of control, and if there's something that can help me wrangle that, and it sounds like it more works with my behavior than it does with the behavior of the email client, right? So it's going to help me be more efficient getting through those things and not clogging my Gmail box quite as much as it is. I should look over at that thing, but it looks like I've got a couple thousand, almost 2,500 unread things in my Gmail box right now. So I should probably.
It's like me. Notifications. They really irk me. So I have to read it. I have to do something with it, and that's what Mailbox lets you do: archive it, delete it, snooze it for later, just get rid of it.
Yeah, what I can't believe is how much stuff doesn't end up in my inbox because it's spam. If you ever click on that spam folder, which I rarely have to do anymore. It used to be if an email disappeared or something, or I was expecting an email and I didn't get it, I'd have to go kind of check the spam folder. And more I've never had to do that over the last couple of years, or I haven't had to do that very often. But if you do, you see the spate of offers of different pills and potions and things and services on the web that, the nefarious sort of design, and it's just kind of it's kind of an eye opener to wander through your spam box occasionally, but it's another reminder that before the days of Gmail and really good spam filtering, you were reading that stuff every day, or you were going through it and deleting it, and that was just hours and hours and hours of productivity.
Yeah, that was usually the assumption if you couldn't find an email, was that someone emailed it to you and you went to spam.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? Anyway, it can still happen, but it just doesn't happen very often, and those filters are really paying off, I guess. Somebody's designing some really good filters somewhere. Joel Brovelite, I see some back-channel talk here about an iWatch. What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of rumors that Apple's working on a wearable device, I think it's being referred to colloquially as the iWatch, which is a clever name for the device, but I really don't think they'll use that name for obvious reasons. But I think it'll be less of a watch and more of this kind of wearable technology that you're seeing a lot kind of in the edges of the market right now, that it's really gaining popularity, like the Jawbone Up. And there are several devices that are like that that can help you with things it can be an alarm clock and help you lose weight. You can use that as a location device, figure out where you are, and it'll probably be more of a companion to an iOS device and not so much a replacement for the phone, I think.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see if they actually come up with something.
So hardware that's going to complement another piece of hardware. Is this all in the kind of sports fitness marketplace right now, or what other applications are there coming?
Well, certainly in the sports fitness market, that's where it has huge traction. But I think if you just step outside of that market a bit, you can see lots of really awesome reasons to have such things. Obviously, telling time is a nice thing. We've all had watches that do that. But if you could have a device that could help you track your daughter or find out where maybe an elder relative is, if they get lost, a device like that would be great for that. It might also be able to sense temperature or something like that and tell you, it's really cold and you've been outside for a while, maybe you ought to put on a jacket, or maybe you need to go in, or the weather's going to be bad and I know you don't have a coat, so maybe you should get a coat or get an umbrella. A device like that could do all these things and could do that right now. So it would be very interesting to see a wearable device. I definitely think it's in Apple's realm of expertise, but it's a question whether they see a big enough market to actually come up with a device.
Yeah, I would argue the market's almost already been tested. I mean, if you look at the Pebble Watch, which was the pretty famous Kickstarter project, which raised about $10 million, I think the largest Kickstarter project to date. And of course they've had some troubles because they were in prototyping kind of stage when they did their Kickstarter video, and I think I've just read now that they're finally shipping almost a year later, 10 months I think it was. But Apple obviously would deliver with their supply chain and their history and their marketing. People, I agree, I think the market is there. Someone would use it.
The use that I see for it is even a little more mundane than what you guys have been talking about. But, just having my phone in my pocket, if my watch were to pop up and give me the caller ID and allow me to silence that call, if I leave it on the table and I walk away, if I leave it at the bar and I, get out of range and my watch vibrates, it says, hey, you left your phone laying back there. You know, if I could do, maybe it tells me I've got two text messages or something like that, instead of having to pull it out during a meeting and interrupt everything, everybody's like, well, why are they checking their phone? It's just a little more subtle, a little more elegant. You know, there's just a lot of things my phone tells me that I think could be told to me on my watch that would be a little more graceful.
I agree.
Any other Kickstarter things have been interesting and that you've seen, John T. Meyer, recently? Or
I actually was going to throw out in the Facebook page. I'll go ahead and talk about it now. I believe, if you read it, but a guy is trying in the UK to make an open source Death Star from Star Wars, actually. So he's looking to raise 20 million British pounds. And so far he's got 213,000. And so he talks about kind of how the government, the people had asked for a Death Star, and the government said no, and he's now trying to raise money on Kickstarter. So anything's possible on Kickstarter, I guess.
I'm going to have to watch that video to find out what's going on there. But, who wouldn't want a Death Star, I guess, but especially if somebody else is funding it.
You could own a minority part owner of the Death Star.
Yeah. Joel, what is that you're speaking into right now? Have you got a USB mic that looks like something?
No, this is a mic. Just a mic. It's a microphone.
Oh, all right. Oh, there it is. It's kind of a bullet mic.
It's a kick drum mic is actually what it is.
It looks like something you're going to whip out a harmonica and start playing into.
That bad guy from the last Batman movie.
You're paying.
Yes.
I thought it was maybe a fancy USB mic, but I was going to ask you what that was. But anyway,
no, it is. It is. It is going in via USB, though. So there you have it.
So we have a couple of dates to watch. Amos, what was the date on the Sanford project again?
Well,
that was Valentine's Day, right?
Valentine's Day from 5:30 to 6:30. Stop on out and see me up there.
Learn about the internet.
Right.
At Sanford. And John T. Meyer, the OTA sessions will be at Augustana College March 15th. Is that correct?
March 15th, that's a Friday.
The Ides of March, as they are.
Yeah, exactly.
So so don't beware of them, but mark that on your calendar because it's certainly something that is a big tech deal. You've got, Foursquare folks there, and many other large companies being represented right on local soil. So
it's certainly important. We don't get those opportunities here locally too often. We have to go to other places to see some of those speakers and experience that type of conference. So when it's here in our backyard, definitely got to support it.
Joel, are you playing somewhere anytime soon? Tonight? Tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow the South Dakota or the Dakota Wind Ensemble is playing at the South Dakota Bandmasters In-Service Music Conference in Brookings, and so that'll be fun. They've got a John Philip Sousa expert in, so we'll be doing a kind of a closed concert actually tomorrow, and then on Monday I'm playing with a Latin group in Brookings.
Who doesn't like a good march? That's what I want to know. Anyway, Well, I want to thank our panelists today, Joel Brovelite, Amos Asip from SDN Communications, Nine Clouds, John T. Meyer, and Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate all your time. And folks, we'll hear from you again in 2 weeks, February 22nd, I believe that is. Please join us again then. A reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, please check out an archive of the show. Our podcast is posted to the web right after the show. SDPB.org is where you'll want to go for that.